Damien. And that's about all I know in Russian. It's my third lesson. At least now. So, we're going to speak today about System Center 2012 SP1. And because it's the last session of the day, I wanted to make it demo only. I failed on the demo only because I have one slide. So forgive me that slide. It is just what we're going to see over this hour. We're going to build a cloud and see how we build a cloud from the data center admin point of view all the way up to the application owner. At the end of the day, at the end of the session, we will have a front-end that is available to our application owners. They can have a self-service portal where they can have requests for service template. Those service templates are going to be executing or connected to the engine of our private cloud. This is what we call the service delivery and the automation. The core of the engine that actually configure and deploy virtual machines, of course, but also applications on your infrastructure. Physical servers, network, storage, and everything. That infrastructure can be deployed on your physical machines, but also on a partner virtual machine or on Microsoft virtual machines running in Azure. And we will see at the end of the hour how the hybrid cloud comes into reality with this new edition of System Center. Once you have deployed an application, you want to monitor it. You want to operate and report to the users, the application owners, which may be you, by the way. It can be the same person having two different personas. That person wants to see how the application is performing. And we will see how we can get those deep insights of the applications running in .NET as Java. We use one product, System Center 2012 SP1, made of 8 components. Virtual Machine Manager is going to be one of them. It's going to manage the infrastructure as we deploy the VMs. The reporting of it and the operational part of it is going to be done through Operations Manager. Data Protection Manager is here to do the backup of the virtual machines without having an agent in the VM. Configuration Manager can be used to configure the servers as they are deployed. And we have two big components called Service Manager, which actually connect very well with Orchestrator. Orchestrator that execute runbooks, workflows, should I say, in the data center. The front end is presented through App Controller to bring that single pane of glass showing to you and your users the private and the public and the hosted cloud through a single web page. And finally, Service Manager for standard request of any users. This is what we're going to see today. So I didn't lie. One slide, demos. pray the demo gods to make sure that everything runs. And we start with Virtual Machine Manager. We will start with Virtual Machine Manager in connecting to the storage. When we build a cloud, we need to get the existing storage that you have. It could be a SAN, it could be a simple SMB share. We are going to abstract the hardware layer to bring just storage to our cloud. So I'm going to use an iSCSI array that is running in this demo environment on Windows Server 2012, but it could be running on a Dell SAN, Dell Equalogic, IBM, Fujitsu, Hitachi, and so on. So the first thing we have to do is to add the provider to our environment. So I'm going to add a storage device. That storage device can be based on Windows Server, and that is new with Windows Server 2012. You can run a virtual machine on a simple SMB share. Or you can add a storage device that is using SMIS. That SMIS protocol is a standard protocol used by all the storage vendors. They have agreed on this management protocol so that whenever you need to create a new LUN, we will use SMIS to create the LUN on the storage area network. Let's create it. We understand two versions of SMIS. We will use SMIS WMI, and I'm going to connect by my server to SRV2. And I'm using my administrator account. At that time, we are connecting to the agent that runs on SRV2 to discover the storage that is available on that machine. You will see I'm very rich. I only have two disks available on this server for a capacity of 253 gig. Anyway, we have two disks, which can be considered as storage pool if you're talking to a SAN. So we're going to agree on that. And I don't want to use my C drive for the demo, so I'm just going to use the E. When you create, or when you add storage to your private to your fabric, you have to define to which classification you want to add it to. The classification is a simple single label, and you can use any name you want. It has to be a name that is making sense for you in terms of organization. So I'm going to do a new classification, and I'm going to call it Suite. And I'm going to add that storage into the suite classification. And we're good to go. So now that I have added this storage to my fabric, I'm going to the servers, and I'm going to spend some time over here. We have here what we call a host group. The host group can be considered as the same way you consider or use in Active Directory. It's a way to organize your servers that are running a hypervisor. I'm very precise running a hypervisor because we understand Hyper-V, Windows Server 2012, Windows Server 2008 R2, Windows Server 2008. We also understand VMware, VMware ES6 5 and 6, 4 and 5. And we understand Xen version 5 and 6. So you can manage VMware infrastructures, VMware ES6 servers with VMM without changing anything in your organization. You will bring those servers in the different host groups that you have. I'm very rich, I have one single server, which is my laptop. And on that server, we are going to add some storage. So I'm going to the properties of my group, and I'm going to allocate gigabytes of data to the group that I've just selected. Thinking of the OU similarities, it's like creating a GPO for storage that will be collected by the servers that are member of this host group. So I can allocate directly a storage pool, but I'm going to allocate a logical unit. I'm going to allocate storage pool, sorry. So I'm still going to take the E drive, add it, and validate. Fine. Now I'm going to the properties of my server, my physical machine. Go to the storage tab. And I'm just going to prepare my screen so you can see something. I'm going to add a new disk. So I'm connected on VMM, and I'm going to add a disk on the physical machine that can run anywhere on my network. As I've added a storage pool, I don't have a LAN available. I'm just going to create a new one on that disk, sweet, 2 gig, and validate. So out of the 126 gigs that are available, I'm taking 2 to create a partition that I'm going to expose to this host. NBARM, sweet, as the label, quick format, and I'm going to give a letter for that, which is S. That's as simple as it is. Now look at my computer. While we speak, the VMM agent that runs on this host will be actually piloted by VMM and say, okay, now you need to mount the iSCSI drive that runs on SRV2. And we automatically configure the disk to make sure that it's available on the host. Now, the host that we have will automatically use that storage to place virtual machines. So when we will deploy virtual machines on that environment, we understand where the virtual machine is, we understand onto which SAN it is located, and in case we have to move things around, we can recover the LAN and mount it on another location because we know how to do it. Any questions on storage? You can say it in Russian, I will try to understand. Or Ukrainian, or whatever. Whatever language, we get it. Yes?
If I not have a SMICE or SMICE storage server, can I use
existing storage?
Existed iSCSI target for fabric.
So you cannot connect to an iSCSI target that will not understand SMIS. However, you can use Windows Server 2012 to mount that iSCSI target, all of it, and then through that you will use the SMIS agent to create the LANs on this iSCSI target. So you will not connect directly to the iSCSI target. You have to go through an intermediary process. So you have to put something in between. If the SMIS agent, if the SMI, if the SAN does not have an SMIS agent, you have to go through something intermediate, like a proxy. Let's take it as a proxy. Most of the vendors today have an SMIS agent. So have a look. Maybe we can look at it, see if it's listed. But we have very big list of providers that we understand. Does that answer your question? Okay. Now that we've seen storage, virtualization a bit, I will talk about networking. So with VMM SP1, we have improved networking a lot. Bear with me, it's a bit complex. When we talk about networks, the first thing we have to think of is the logical network. A logical network is an entity that will represent the physical network for the hosts that are on your network. So I'm going to call it SWIFT. On one logical network, you can be on multiple physical network sites. The idea is that when you deploy a VM on site A, the VM will get an IP address that corresponds to the IP addressing of that site. If you deploy a VM to site B, that same VM will get an IP address corresponding to the addressing of site B. It goes even further because you can have multiple VLANs, and for each site you can associate multiple subnet and multiple VLANs for this logical network. Then when you deploy the VM will be connected to logical network that we've just created called SWIT. So I create my VM, connect it to SWIT. If I deploy the VM to site A, then I don't have to worry. It will automatically get an IP address that matches site A addressing. If I deploy to B, it will automatically get an IP address of site B. So let's go to Paris, which is where my server is. And I'm going to add an IP address, VLAN 0, and subnet, let's say 10.10.12.0/24. So when I will deploy a VM, it will get this IP from here. How do you get the IP from here? Well, we get the IP where we put the IP to the VM through an IP pool. So when I attach an IP pool to my logical network, I'm going to switch 0, I can define which kind of IP addresses I'm using. I can be very wide, I can be very restrictive, but the VM will think it has a fixed IP address. Although it looks like a dynamic IP address, we don't use DHCP. It is a fixed IP address that is assigned to the VM by the VM agents that are running in the VM with the integration tools. So we use the integration tools to allocate that IP address to the VM. Then you can define the gateway, DNS, WINS, blah, 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 all what is about networking. I'm coming back to the virtual machine agents. We support multiple operating systems. So you can run Windows, but you can run Linux VMs, Ubuntu, CentOS, Red Hat, SUSE. Redhat and Suzy have the virtual machine, agent, the integration tools for Hyper-V embedded into the distributions that we support. Which means when you deploy Redhat on a Hyper-V, it will detect it is running on Hyper-V and mount the integration tools on that installation. It brought Microsoft to be one of the top 10 contributors of the Linux kernel in 2011. Our Hogwarts, well, we've been working on the kernel with the kernel team of Linux to make sure the integration tools were working correctly. And we've been contributing to the Linux kernel. Let's go a bit further than that. So we've created our network, we know that now. We have two things that are very interesting now. Logical switches. And port classifications. Logical switches. A logical switch can be imagined as a template that you create into VMM, and that template will be applied to the Hyper-V host when you put a machine in a host group. So let's create a logical switch. You define which extension you want to have. Those extensions can be added, and for example, we have the Cisco Nexus 1000 extension since 3 weeks from now. So Cisco has been working with us to get this extension here. Which means if you have a Nexus 1000 in your network, you can manage the Hyper-V switch from the Nexus 1000. On that logical switch, we need to create two things. The uplink, so do we team the uplink? The uplink is what comes from the wire up to the logical switch. So we won't do any teaming here. And we need to create the port profile. Oh, I don't have any. I'm going to create a port profile. Next. And you define port classifications for the virtual ports that are part of this logical switch. So a port classification defines the bandwidth, the maximum bandwidth, the minimum bandwidth that you want to allow on specific ports that are on this logical switch. So for example, if you want to have a medium bandwidth port profile, you can use this one. I'll show you how it looks like in a minute. I need to create my uplink port profile, so I'm just going to create one. And if I go back to my logical switch, here it is. I can select demo switch. And now I have my logical switch. So that logical switch will then be applied to the host group and then will be cascaded to the hosts that are member of this host group. Think of it as a template of the network configuration that you want to have to have on every single host that is member of this host group. So when you add a new machine, that machine will automatically get this network configuration for the Hyper-V virtual switch. Any questions on that? No question? Yeah, question? Microphone. There is a microphone somewhere.
No?
Okay.
It's about the IP address pool.
The IP address pool?
Yeah, is it correct that that you always have some fixed IP for each virtual machine, and there is no actual DHCP server for this virtual network.
So if you create a virtual IP pool and you allocate that virtual IP pool to the VM, then yes, it will not get a DHCP address. It doesn't mean that you cannot have a DHCP. You can say that VM, I want to have a DHCP for that virtual machine. It is when you create the virtual machine template that you define how you want the machine to behave. So you have the capability, but it doesn't mean you have to use it. It's an option.
If you want to have it pool, if it has a pool, so it's isolated, like, yes?
Each pool is isolated,
yes. That's why.
When you turn off the VM, when you shut it down, when you delete the virtual machine, we reclaim the IP address so it can be delivered to another virtual machine.
How can we build Cisco Nexus 1000 to the Hyper-V, and how can we manage it?
So, when you have a Cisco 1000, Cisco can provide an executable, and you execute that executable on the VMM console and on the VMM server. So you have to run it on the server and the console. That will provide the extension on the VMM environment, and it will be cascaded to the Hyper-V extensible switch. So after you have installed that executable on the VMM, when you go to a Hyper-V, when you go to the virtual switch manager, it will appear in the extensions that are here, and you can select it if you want to use it, or you deselect if you don't want to use it. Then the Nexus will talk to the Hyper-V switch through a protocol that they have, and the Hyper-V extension, the Nexus Hyper-V extension, will configure the Hyper-V virtual switch to put the VLANs and whatever you need to configure on that.
And one more question. Some virtual machine will live in some VLANs. What will if some of virtual machines will go to another node?
So, coming back to that, it's an excellent question. Spasibo. If the machine has been tagged to a specific VLAN, where is it? Where is my VLAN configuration? There it is. So you can tag the port of a VM to a specific VLAN. You live migrate or you move the VM to another host, you have to make sure that the VLAN follows, which means VLAN reconfiguration, which can be cumbersome, difficult. That's why we understand with VMM, software-defined networking. So SDN is understood in VMM, SP1, and Windows Server 2012. In that situation, you don't need to have a VLAN, you just need to create your SDN, and you attach the VM to the SDN. When you move the VM, the SDN will follow using all the configuration and the routing that comes with it. So, no magic, you have to reconfigure the VLAN when you move the VM.
For example, if we have one VLAN and on first port, on one node, we leave one machine, and on another node will leave another machine on the same port.
Okay.
If virtual machine from first node will go to another node, on which port it will appear?
It depends on the virtual switch that you have configured. So when you manage the Hyper-V virtual switch, you assign them to a physical network interface. That, well, to a fit to a network interface. That network interface can be a physical one, and if this is a physical one, you have to make sure that when you do a cluster, the virtual switch that are attached to the same physical ports have the same name. Because when you do the failover, if this is virtual switch A, it will look for virtual switch A on the other node. If it does not exist, it would say, no network, sorry, I don't know which one to choose. So you have to make sure you get the same names. Now we have in 2012 the ability to say, if I'm on A here, and if I fail to another node, then I want to use another virtual switch, which has a different name. So when you configure the VM, you can define the virtual switch of the failover. But at the end of the day, it matches the physical interface. Because the virtual switch is attached to a physical interface.
As I understood, we have the same config file on each... if I have understood, we have the same config file on each switch.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, let's move on. Let's go. Oh, question.
Can I have one-click compare physical VLANs with VLANs on virtual switch?
Can you...
I have physical VLANs on... and I have VLAN on virtual switch.
Okay.
Can I one-click compare VLAN on virtual switch and physical VLAN?
I'm sorry, the answer is no, or yet. sorry, no, we don't know, we don't make the match, and we don't, well, we will not make that match automatically, for example, if that is the question. So we don't know what is the VLAN of the physical interface. We know the VLAN of the virtual interface, but we don't know the VLAN of the physical interface, so that would be that's where the problem is. Does that answer the question? Okay. So I'm going a bit further because I have 100 things I want to show you. So we've created our fabric, we've abstracted the fabric. Now we create, on top of that, a cloud. Creating a cloud is as simple as a right-click, create a cloud, give a name, and then we assign physical resources to this cloud. So you select the hosts, you select the logical network. I don't have any available left, but you select the logical networks. You select the load balancers, if you have any. Virtual IP templates. Port classifications. Storage. The library where we will put all the resources that are necessary to create the virtual machines. And the capacity that you want to allow for that cloud. So you can limit how many VMs you want to run. And which host you want to allow to be in this environment. As I said, Hyper-V, Xen, or ESX. and that's it. Once we have our cloud, we can create the virtual machine templates. We can create applications that will run on this cloud. So I've prepared that, and I have two different VM templates, one of them running Windows Server 2012, and one of them running Linux. Just wanted to show you we have those options. The template, well, requires a VHD that has been sysprepped. So you create your VM, you sysprep that virtual machine, and then you can go in the template and configure the hardware, how much memory I have, how much processors I have, which network that machine is going to be connected to, and so on. Then we configure the operating system, the name of the machine, the different roles and features. We use those roles and features as we do for the deployment of Windows using Windows Server Image Manager, or just the add roles and feature from the server manager. Do you want to join it to a domain or to a row group? You define all of that in the VM template, and then on that VM, you can deploy applications. I'm going to walk through that more tomorrow evening, afternoon. We'll see how we can add application over here. But you can say, I want to add a web application on that machine. So when I will deploy that virtual machine, I will have my web application immediately available. Or I can deploy a virtual application. And that virtual application will run in its own virtual environment in the VM. Or I can deploy SQL with a schema of a database that will be applied at deployment time. For Linux, it's a bit more simple, I would say, because we, same thing, we deploy the hardware, processors and stuff like that. But for the operating system, we have less options. Well, first of all, we don't need to sysprep. Linux doesn't have to be sysprepped. Then you define which version of the operating system you have, the identity, the root credentials, and the SSH certificate, the SSH key certificate. It can be defined at this time. And then you can run any command you want to run. So you run your script at the boot time. So we have our two VMs. Well, a VM is good, but I have something more interesting. I have what we call the service template. A service template has something extra from a virtual machine. That little extra is a designer. So I'm going to create a new machine, a new service template. And you define in that service template if you want to have a single machine, or you may want to have a three-tier application, like SharePoint. SharePoint is a three-tier application. We have a front end, we have a middle tier that will manage the data, and we have a database. Let's go for a simple one. Then when you create your template, you select the VM you want to put into it. You can reconfigure the VM. modify a couple of things. And we have an interesting concept. The tier can be scaled out, which means that if we need, we can automatically take that machine, create a clone out of it, make a copy of it, and make sure that whatever we want to expose on the network will be load balanced. So for example, a web application will be load balanced on port 80. If you want to do RDP, you do 389. And then we have the availability set. The availability set will ensure that if we have more than one machine in that service template, they will not be deployed on the same physical servers. Because we know that if you deploy two machines of a cluster on the same physical machine, what happens? When the machine fails, well, everything fails. So the availability set will make sure they are running on different physical machines. Once that is deployed, and we'll do it tomorrow, it looks like that. I have different services running. One of them is made of one tier, WebApp 01. And the blog engine is made of two tier with a database and a web server. Let's have a look at this one, the WebApp 01. I'm going to show you how it looks like. So this application is running a very complex web app. Very complex. I'm going to connect on that machine. Where is it? Web app. And I need to do something. You don't see that. You haven't seen that. So I'm going to run on that client, on that machine, some CPU activity. So let's pretend that this web application has some CPU performance problem. Well, we have that. So for this application, this very specific application, I'm using Operations Manager to monitor the content of the app to understand what the application is doing. I should have launched that before. So Ops Manager will catch the problem and will generate an alert. The alert that the CPU is not running fine. But we will not stay here. We will have more coming on. So you see I have multiple alerts going on purpose. So it takes a bit of time to catch up on that problem because we don't monitor it, live. We make sure that it is a real problem before we actually report the problem. There it is. Did you see that? So I have an alert. WebApp 01 has a problem on CPU. Well, now what I'm going to do is I'm going to report that alert from operations manager into service manager. So system center service manager is going to show me the incidents that are related to this problem. So you see, now I've done it before. And if I look at this one, I have an incident that is recorded into my configuration management database. And I know that the incident was automatically generated because of CPU load on one of the service templates. If I have a help desk team or a second level help desk team, I can put that incident into their queue so they can look at the problem the next morning without having any human intervention. But we do a bit more. We connect that incident with Orchestrator. Orchestrator is the workflow that runs in my data center. And when I have a problem like that, I want to scale out, create another instance of that VM. So I'm calling my runbook by passing the incident ID. So I have my incident in Service Manager, and I'm calling the workflow and say, hey, workflow, deploy a new VM. So if you look at the orchestrator, the workflow, that's my workflow. The workflow does a couple of things. Well, first of all, we get the incident. Then, for debugging purposes, I'm getting the info to a log file. That's my little paranoia. Then I'm getting the actual incident info, writing the incident number to a log file to make sure I'm doing correctly my job. And then I scale out my tier. And that is something you cannot do with a single virtual machine, because the tier configuration allows you to do that cloning and deploy that machine in the environment. And yes, yes, Orchestrator is an extensible platform, which means I can tweet when I've done my deployment. To public, of course, because I want to see it on my phone. If you want to look at it, if you want to follow that, it's dcaro cloud, and that is the tweet, my demo is successful. That was the one from yesterday night. I tested it yesterday night late. So if you want to look at it, well, feel free. It will tweet in about 20 minutes or so. It takes about that time to deploy a new VM. Where is my orchestrator? Here it is. Well, I said it's an extensible platform because we connect to system center components, of course, and that's totally fine. It's understandable. But we also connect to VMware. So if you have vSphere in place, you can kick off deployment of a new virtual machine directly from VMware. We also connect to Active Directory. So you can read the Exchange account in Active Directory, the account in Active Directory. But you can also look into email, files, Yammer. Yeah, I didn't say Yammer, but you can say Yammer. And yes, you can also talk to Windows Azure. So Azure is totally integrated into this platform. And actually, when we're talking about Azure, where is it? Azure is totally integrated into our platform. So when you are deploying, you can use App Controller to connect to your private cloud and public cloud through one single pane of glass. Come on. So one single pane of glass, you can manage all your environments. And you can go to your clouds and deploy the service template that we have created before. So when we create a template, it will be exposed over here. And I can take my virtual machine application, VM app, web app, there it is. Then I'm configuring some elements like the service name. You can add the cost center. So it could be marketing. Then you can configure the instance, check the name, the computer name of that instance, the memory. If we had multiple networks, it would be connected, and you could choose the virtual network over here. Coming back to the importance of the name, when an IT person deploys to my VM network, it doesn't care if it's on VLAN 1, 2, or Z, or whatever. It just goes to my lab network. And I just click deploy. I'm not going to click deploy. It takes another 20 minutes, and I see my disk a bit busy. But it will actually talk to VMM to say, take that service template and deploy it. And it will find the right host for the deployment of the VMs. You can do the same thing in Azure. So if you go to Windows Azure, you can select some images amongst the one that Microsoft offers you, depending on the speed of the network. Come on. Well, you will get the iMage here, eventually. And we can deploy the same thing that we should be deploying the same thing that we have in our private cloud, in the public cloud. What if that doesn't work? I'm just going to go directly to the Azure. You can deploy the VMs from Microsoft, but you can also deploy your own images. So you can have your own disks that are uploaded to Windows Azure and deploy a virtual machine in Windows Azure based on that disk. So because the portal doesn't really help me here, I'm going directly to Windows Azure. And I want to show you three things. The first one is that you can create that image from here. And we'll take a Windows Server Data Center image. I'm going to say switch demo. And I'm going to select a virtual machine, and we have multiple size. The default one is the small one, but I'm going to be fun tonight, and because it's before drinks and the parties, and I am going to select an A7 machine. Well, it's going to cost a bit of money to Microsoft, but who cares? Okay, we're ready. 8 cores, 56 gig of RAM. Then we can deploy that virtual machine either standalone, or we can connect that virtual machine to another set of virtual machines. It means that you can deploy it independently, or if you connect to an existing virtual machine, we will use software-defined networking. The VM that we are deploying will run in their own virtual network, not VLANs, virtualized network, with your own IP addresses. This one. With this own IP addresses, so my own subnet 10.10.11, based on my IP addresses, and bear with me, we make an availability set, so we know they will remain available, and they will not be deployed on the same physical servers in Azure. We use different racks, different machines. And while the deployment goes on, the network that I'm using for the deployment here is actually a virtual network that runs in Azure. That's my Azure network. The gateway is provided by Microsoft in Azure. And what is in green is my network at home. My network in my data center with the IP address that I use. The Azure virtual network is just becoming a seamless integration of my on-premises environment. So I have my resources totally used in the green environment. I cannot get another VM, not a problem. Kick off a VM over here. Those virtual machines, I have some of them. I have this one, NTK Azure VM. And if I go to NTK Azure VM.cloudapp.net, it will connect to a front end that is running in Azure. And oh, I forgot to get a new one. Getting it from the gallery. But in that situation, I'm going to create NTK Azure VM2. I'm going to use Azure VM. I'm going to use the image. Sorry, that's what I wanted. I'm going to use my own image. So in that case, I'm going to deploy my VHD, means my own code and my own application on top of it. Extensible, unlimited resources almost. Large VMs, small VMs, integrated in your private cloud. It's a very quick overview of the private cloud. We could spend a full day on it, showing you the self-service portal, so users can request virtual machine, they can be approved, and so on. But It's time for the party, as I've understood. Just wanted to give you one resource. It's MicrosoftVirtualAcademy.com, where you can get more info. I'd like to invite you to try Windows Server 2012, System Center 2012, Windows Azure. And it's almost party time. But before that, one last request, if I can slide my... fill in the evals, feedback, so on, and with that, спасибо.